This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The clothesline is almost a thing of the past, a past in which women were closely identified with the domestic duty of washing clothes. But it's also a place, a clothesline, where community could gather, a shared space of the clothesline where women socialized, played, and forged connections with each other and their environment. A domestic chore became a means to a form of empowerment. That's the idea behind the Clothesline Muse, a new multi-genre project that combines dance, jazz vocals, and paper art into one performance.
This is the way we wash our clothes, wash our clothes, wash our clothes. This is the way we wash our clothes.
Grammy-nominated vocalist Nina Freelon created the project as a way to explore these previously untold stories in a new way, and she joins us in our studio. Welcome back, Nina. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
And you brought your daughter, Maya Freelon Asante, or yes, perhaps she brought her mother, who is in her own right a visual artist and a co-creator of this show.
Yes, and I drove, so I brought her.
That's great. Well, tell us about the genesis. How did this come together?
Well, the Clothesline Muse was originally the brainchild of Kariyama Welsh, who is our choreographer, and also Maya's mother-in-law. And we all wanted to work together. So Maya has chosen to work with both of her mothers. I don't know what she was thinking.
And around the clothesline, no less. So
around the clothesline. Yeah, around the clothesline. I mean, when I was a young woman, I was running as fast as I could away from things domestic. I saw myself as not caring about those things. And if I did care, it would be just, who am I going to pay to do this? So this Clothesline Muse production in which I play the muse is an opportunity for me to say thank you. It's an opportunity for me to do some research into what it really took for my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother to keep house. And there's no Grammy nomination for raising good kids, for keeping the house. So we're hoping to bring light and to place this on the stage in such a way that it says, this too is art. And so Maya is really helping us with the art part of it.
I am my mom-in-law. I call her Mama Kay. She said, I want to include your art in a theater setting. And I thought, wow, I'm used to the gallery, the white wall, the bright lights. And she, when we brought it into the black box and lit the tissue paper, it looks amazing. So it was her foresight to kind of blend the two. And then we just got the trifecta going. And I pride myself in making sure that the play is fun for all ages and staying in the contemporary hip factor. So there's not only just jazz and old school, it's also contemporary beats and music.
But you are a member of the post-clothesline generation, I would say. What's in it for you, and what do you see? What is it about the clothesline that can inspire original art for this project for you?
That's a really good point. I thought I was too, but being submerged into this beautiful production, I've found a lot of joy in creating quilt-like pieces that go up on the clothesline, using the clothesline as an art tool. And I also created a set that involved some contemporary items and some that are old school, like the rubbing board and the wash bucket. All of those things are really instrumental in the play.
Tell us about some of these other ideas that I mentioned in the introduction, this being kind of a space of community, places where women came together and had some kind of power.
Absolutely. When you looked at the clothesline in days past, you could look on the line and tell who lived in the house, the ages. You could tell whether there was a man there or not. You could tell how many children. You could tell whether company was coming because the good tablecloth came out. So what we find here is as we move into homes and everyone has their own washer and dryer, it becomes something that's very individual. Whereas in the past, it was a communal place, a place where you gathered to maybe gossip a little bit about what was going on, but you'd also learn the community information. And in the North, you actually shared a clothesline. Between the tenements, there was a rotary clothesline where you had to share with someone who you might not ever see except for in this interaction between buildings when you hung your clothes out to dry.
You talked about this, you're wanting to run away as fast as you could. You had a profession before you, and the idea of you know, being any part of this was no part of what you wanted. You have a postcard here of a woman who appears to be an African-American woman. This appears to have been taken some time ago with a bundle of laundry on her head. Tell us about the postcard and the photograph.
We found this picture and inscribed. It was a postcard back in the 30s. And inscribed on the postcard says Pine Bluff, North Carolina, which I didn't even know there was a Pine Bluff, North Carolina. And we became intrigued by looking at the woman's face. We didn't know her story. She's standing there dressed in this very interesting way, a long, long skirt and a ruffled collar, looks like maybe hand-me-down clothes, and she has a burlap sack on her head with presumably clothes in it. So she's a washerwoman, and it became something that we began to research. Who is a washerwoman? Who is a laundress? What do they do? What is their life like? And I wanted to give voice. We joke and say that this woman, this nameless woman, is our CEO. Because all of the research that we've done, all of the interviews that I've done with women of all ages, helps to inform this piece. This is called devised theater, which means that we take interview footage, historical reference, first voice stories. And one of the most interesting first voice stories for us is the 1881 washerwoman strike in Atlanta, when the African-American washerwomen shut Atlanta down. We don't even learn this in school, but they shut it down because they said, we want a minimum of $1 per 12 pounds of washing or we're not going to wash. And they held a strike, and it's awesome. It's the first organized strike on record. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
And you'll hear that tonight, the
yes,
dear
that's
sir.
Right, tonight, dear sir. That's right.
It's an interesting question, too, because this photograph and the kind of the issues that you're talking about, it's a complicated photograph if you look
it
at
is.
It. I mean, it is a lot to run away from,
this
servant role that's portrayed in this picture. But your idea of embracing this and saying, no, what are the stories? If you give a voice to this photograph, it transforms it from pure servant to some kind of power.
Well, you know, we originally thought that we were going to tell stories around the line. And so it sort of was like nostalgia, it was memory. And then we realized there's a subculture. The women who washed clothes for other women had different stories. And what I love about the clothesline is there is a place for every story. There's an Irish washerwoman story. There is a Chinese laundry story. There's the story that's just wonderful. I love the way the sheets smelled when they were dried on the line. That's a valid, relevant story on the line, too. But so is, I used to wash clothes for Miss Anne, and she was never satisfied with, you know, or I was never paid enough, or it was backbreaking work, or whatever. There is a place on the line, and Maya has very artfully help to shape these stories with her projections.
Well, Frank, you mentioned earlier online. We went from on the line to online, and there's a new culture coming. There's a way that we keep in touch. We're almost able to see everybody's in and outs on Facebook, Twitter. So we're juxtaposing those two ideas in the play. And the two main characters, Nina is Grandma Blue, but there's also Mary Mac Douglas, who's got her iPhone in, earbuds in, focused, trying to get away from all of it, trying to go to school, and really at odds with her grandma. And we kind of pulled on our own stories together and thinking about my grandmother and her. Just when I was a teenager, I didn't get it. I didn't get what she was trying to teach me. And so Mary Mac Douglas goes through this transformation, and it's really vital for all ages to witness.
Well, yeah. I mean, you air your dirty laundry on Facebook, but you don't get that country fresh smell.
No, you don't. You sure don't. And it never goes away.
Whatever it is, it never goes away. That's the other problem. Well, so what are the other elements in this? So we've got graphic design, paper, and this beautiful visuals that you create, dance and song.
I'm writing the music and the poetry, and I've written the book. So the part of it that is theater dialogue, I wrote that. So.
We also have live projections on stage, multiple projections on different surfaces. So it's really visually rich as well as musically. At first we thought, oh, dance, music, art. That'll be easy. 2 years later, we just finished the script and we're feeling really good about it.
Where do the stories come from?
The stories come from interviews. They come from historical research. They come from, we had a wonderful woman named Gail Jennings, who I ran into very randomly at the farmer's market, who told me an awesome story that has found its way into the script.
Let me interrupt you and forgive me, but are these stories curated anywhere? Is there a library of washerwomen stories?
I'm so glad you asked that question because we are developing a curatorial repository, and we're also actively soliciting more stories. The more questions we ask, the more stories we get. I went to Eastern North Carolina and interviewed a woman who was 96 years old, and she told me some stories that were, I mean, washing clothes in an iron pot, boiling the clothes, making your own starch, and using something called bluing, which makes your clothes white somehow. So the stories are really rich, and we've been blessed, Frank, because we've gotten such great support from right here in the Triangle. Haytie, St. Joseph's Historic Foundation, is our commissioning sponsor, and so they are really, you know, giving us that early push. The Durham Arts Council has been awesome, helping us get this piece because we want to put it in front of people's faces so that they realize that great art happens right here. And that also we want an intergenerational conversation. We didn't want this to be an old-timey show about back in the good old days. And believe me, I do not want to go back to washing with a washboard. Now that I know what the work is, but I do want to celebrate the fact that somebody whose name I may not know pinned my dreams to the sky and made it possible for me to live this privileged life that I live.
Well, going forward, Maya, you talked about how interesting it was to see what your grandmother was talking about. I mean, that's one thing. And again, that sort of points somewhat to nostalgia. But if you think about a movement of women trying to gain a voice, and it is still a work in progress in this society, what is it about the modern movement that is still fighting to gain an equal voice that it can learn from women who very definitely had a role that they had to hew to back in that time?
Well, we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors, and that is so true in this piece. I see what she was fighting for, what my grandmother was teaching me, and luckily I started to make sense to me as I got a little older. Before she passed away, I was able to ask her questions, able to sit with her and listen to the stories. Everybody has the teen years where you don't want to listen, but what she was doing was planting the seed. She always said she came from a family of sharecroppers that never got their fair share. And that, to me, was one of the things she said often, but it started to make sense that she made the sacrifice. She was waiting for somebody to do this honoring, to lift them up into a way that's not subservient. And this, what we're presenting at Durham Arts Council, is just a snippet preview. We haven't even finished the full entire production, so we can't wait to bring that to Durham in January 2015.
Yeah, tell us more about that this is, in fact, a work in progress at the moment.
It is a work in progress. We're going to show a snippet tonight. We're going to talk about Devise Theater, hopefully whip up some excitement to bring the full production here. These kinds of things take a lot of money. I jumped from the proverbial frying pan directly into the fire. If I ever thought touring with a trio was hard, touring with six dancers and a cast of 10 sound people, and I have we have wardrobe people, all of these people have to be paid. And so we're just hoping to whip up some excitement. And Maya, did you want to talk about the environmental piece at all?
Sure. We went from not having a choice to not having a choice. you had to do it because there was no dryer. You had to do it. There was no washer. And now we don't have the choice in certain homeowners associations. You're not even allowed to hang it out because it looks tacky. It looks ugly. It's low class. But you can drive around Durham and you still see clotheslines up. In fact, we've stopped and recorded them and asked questions. So,
and it's an environmentally responsible thing to do.
If you make your own detergent, which I can tell you how to do.
Ooh. I would love to know.
Well, that's it. And so tell us again, give us the scope now and the future, your hope for this project as it moves forward.
We are working on a national tour, and Pam Green is helping us to put it out there. We are looking at touring in the 2014-15 and 15-16 season. We're going to bring it back with the help of Haytai and the Durham Arts Council and our wonderful friends in Durham. In January of 2015. So keep your eyes open for the full production with the dancers. And we're just so happy to be able to have such a rich cultural diversity and artistic diversity here that we don't have to go to New York to find the talent in order to make this work.
Yeah, and I'm not going anywhere, so when you bring it back, I'll definitely be here for
wonderful.
The full production.
That,
you know, it's interesting to me, if you think about Kelly Rowland's song, Dirty Laundry. I mean, it's a way, it's a shout-out, it's a kind of solidarity with Beyoncé, somewhat controversial, but it sounds to me like a song that is a shout-out to a woman who is struggling. And interesting that she's got every metaphor in the world to choose from.
Yeah.
And Dirty Laundry is the one that she chooses.
Also, Through the Ringer, do you know where that came from? Ellen Elgin, which we found just through Google searches. My mom sends me something. Mama Kay sends me something. She in 18...
I can't remember the exact date.
She sold her patent of the Ringer washer, a black woman, for $18.
To a white salesman because she felt that no one would buy her invention if they knew a colored woman invented it. So, you know, through the ringer, being put through the ringer, it takes on a whole nother meaning. And I've written songs. I wrote a song called Separating Whites and Colors. You know, it's rich with metaphor.
Don't it turn your brown eyes blue?
That's right.
I'm sorry.
Crystal Gale. No,
forgive
go
me.
Ahead.
This is amazing because these are, again, untold stories. The strike in Atlanta that we don't hear about. It's not even part of labor history, which we don't hear about. Now the story about the ringer. What are some of the other stories that really surprised you and were revealing in a way that you learned?
Well, one story that really was just heartwarming was the story of a woman who washed clothes for a wealthy family. And at this time, African-American women were not allowed to shop in stores because of segregation. You could see a store from she could see a dress you liked from a store window, but you couldn't enter it in and try it on. So this woman, who was a washerwoman, copied the dresses of this wealthy family that she washed for. She traced the dresses with brown paper and made dresses for her own granddaughters who looked just as fine and dandy as the people who she washed clothes for. So that's an example of transforming your situation into one of power. That to me is taking real power. She's saying, I'm blocked because of Jim Crow laws. I can't go into the store, but I'll be darned if my little girls aren't going to look just as fine as anybody else's daughters due to her own hand. So I just find this so inspirational. And this isn't like the movie The Help. These are real stories of women who have struggled. There are stories of pain and also stories of great beauty. We also look at how the clothesline was a tool of play. When I was a young girl, we would take my mother's clothesline and do double dutch. So the clothesline at play is also another way that we explore.
I'm assuming you took the laundry off first.
We did. In fact, dragging clothes on the ground was something that would get you in big trouble.
You wouldn't be doing
and,
double.
And Miss Mary Mack as well. We touch on her, and that's I've been interviewing girls all over just to see do they still know the song, and they do.
Well, I want to ask you. I've got you down for tomorrow night. Are you also doing something tonight? When's the performance?
The performance is tomorrow night at 6:30. It starts with a buffet.
Great. So I want to thank you both for being on the program. I just want to make sure I had that because
sure,
I thought I heard you say something about
we have rehearsal tonight and performance tomorrow.
Nina Freelon, Maya Freelon Asante, the creators of The Clothesline Muse. The show previews tomorrow night at the Durham Arts Council, 6:30. More information at our website, stateofthings.org. Great to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Coming up next, the immigration challenges facing transgender individuals on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. Stay tuned.